You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. It's another week. Another week has gone down. What's going on, fellas? What's up, Brad? What's up, Jim?
Doing great. It's been a great weekend for me. A little chilly in Dallas, but had a good weekend. Made a pot roast last night, ate it last night and today, so that was all good.
Been a little chilly here, too. Winter decided to return after 70-degree temperatures all week in February, which, you know, completely weird. But, hey, it's the new normal. So what's new in your worlds, guys? What's going on?
I'm stumbling through the world of this new MacBook Pro and complaining on Twitter and everywhere else about the Bluetooth about every 2 or 3 days to somebody, because I posted on Twitter this week. I seriously think that the Bluetooth on this laptop is like class action bad. It just does not work. Home this weekend, I plugged my Apple keyboard into it with a USB lightning cable just so it wouldn't stop disconnecting and reconnecting. My mouse is in and out, so I've got a USB-C hub that I'm plugging the little mouse dongle into instead of using just the Bluetooth and the mouse. It's just not working good for me. And I mean, I've had the same issue with the first one, so I don't think it's like just this laptop. I mean, it's just the Bluetooth doesn't work great, or the AirPods work fine. I mean, there's something with the way they have Bluetooth implemented on here, because I've noticed if I have the AirPods in and I'm actually listening to music from my Mac, which I don't do very often, I'm mostly always listening from my phone. But if I do try to listen from my Mac, the mouse is even worse as far as disconnecting or not connecting at all while it's connected to the AirPods. So there's just definitely something with the Bluetooth on the laptop that's a problem.
What keyboard and mouse do you have?
The keyboard is the Apple, the newer Magic Keyboard, you know, the latest one they released. My mouse is a Logitech Anywhere 2, so MX Anywhere 2, so like the nicest portable mouse that Logitech makes. That it does Bluetooth, you can switch it between 3 different devices, or you can put a dongle or, you know, a little bitty USB dongle in for it to connect to. And if I use that, which I think is also just Bluetooth through that connection, it works fine. So something's weird.
Wonder if you have some sort of interference from other things. The entire time you've lived in there, you've seemed to have some sort of electromagnetic field weirdness.
Oh, but it happens at work too. It's not just at home. So I mean, the mouse thing is at work in St. Louis is still a problem. And that's where I saw the AirPod problem, because I really haven't used the AirPods connected to my laptop at home. So yeah, it's not just here, although I wouldn't doubt, you know, the millions of Wi-Fi signals that are in this building are not helping the case.
All running on 2.4 gigahertz, probably.
You really should live on the edge and install some of the macOS betas, see if it makes a difference for you. I think you'd still be okay. I think you'd still be able to do your job. The point releases seem to be not so bad.
Yeah, I've thought about that. And Brad, to your point, you know, it's funny. Everybody says use 5 gigahertz. But nobody actually releases routers that do just 5 gigahertz. So even if everybody's using 5 gigahertz, the 2.4 is still broadcasting from every single router that anybody buys. So it's still saturated. And I don't know how else to say it.
Well, yeah, on the consumer grade stuff, yeah, you can't really turn off 2.4. But
I was about to say mine do 5 gigahertz. What about yours, Brad? Exclusively 5 gigahertz if I want them to.
Yeah, mine will do exclusively 5 gigahertz if I tell them to. Any enterprise brand would do that.
Oh, well, I can tell it to, but nobody does that. Nobody in my apartment building is going to go in and explicitly turn that off. I'm not going to go around and knock on everybody's door and say that. And plus, I actually have some devices that use 2.4, so I can't turn mine off. Like my little video camera that I have here so I can check on the dogs while I'm not home runs off 2.4 still. I think even maybe my plug might only be 2.4 as well. The plug that I use with Siri might just be 2.4, but I'm not sure.
Interesting. That is sort of strange. You have had tremendous bad luck with this new MacBook Pro.
But I have gotten more used to the keyboard, and I'm finally starting to like it after 2 months. It's finally growing on me to where I can type pretty normal stuff like I used to. Now, I still, every now and then, when I'm on my 13-inch older one and I get on it and start typing on this, I'm like, oh God, this is so much better.
I really like the new keyboard. It is a little clacky as far as the sound that it makes, but I do love the near zero travel of the keys. I guess it's sort of like the iPad keyboard in that there's just very little key travel. I don't really notice the clackiness of it, though, or the clickiness of it. You know, if I'm somewhere noisy like Starbucks, Starbucks or something, when I notice it is when I'm at home and my wife may be in the same room and she's doing something quiet. She's a very quiet person. And I catch myself churning away on it, doing something. And I look up, I'm thinking like, am I just driving her nuts over here?
The comparison of the iPad keyboard, yes, because of the travel, but I love that iPad Pro keyboard. It's always felt great to me. I don't know if it's the spacing's a little different. As far as the clackiness, a coworker of mine bought a 15-inch last month, like just went in and the model, you know, you could just buy directly from the Apple store, and I kind of helped him set some stuff up. And it was really loud. And we were actually, you know, it didn't sound normal. It was like really loud. And we got into the office the next day and it was loud. And by like Thursday, it had kind of calmed down. So I think it was some of the newness. I literally think that was one of the reasons people were complaining about the clackiness when it first came out, is the keys kind of have to work themselves in a little bit. And then it's almost like they get quieter instead of just staying the same. It actually somehow the keyboard gets broken in and it's not quite as loud.
That makes sense. I didn't really notice it, though, just because it's just not one of the things I really pay attention to. You know, that's the clackiness of my keys is not something I worry about other people being triggered over.
Yeah, just in the office, it was that first day, Kevin was like, man, it's really loud. I'm like, yeah, I can hear it over here. And he had already returned one model because he had the sticky key problem and some other issues. And he had bought the 13-inch and had decided to go up to the 15. So he had gotten a second one too. Then he had the loud keys. But like I said, by a couple of days later, it seemed to have calmed down in the office. So anyway, that's what's going on in my world. I still wouldn't like give up my laptop, but it's definitely caused some consternation for me.
I think the funniest thing about the new laptop is how thin it is. You know, I have the 13 and it's just really hyper thin. Somebody noticed the other day, they're like, man, I love your laptop. It's so thin. And they had a PC laptop in their lap. And I'm just thinking, yeah, mine closed is thinner than your screen's lid, you know, just the lid.
Ah, the old PC tanks. So did you guys see that Colorware will paint your AirPods for 130 or more?
I did. And it's really tempting. I don't know if I really want to drop near $300 on it. I guess it would be over $300 after if you got the little charging pod painted too. But I do like the idea of maybe getting one painted one color and one painted the other color. You could do like Jim's Apple Watch thing where one's blue and one's red.
I was just about to say that, where you could get the one red and one blue, Jim, and you could get the case. You could get the case baby blue and then...
Oh, God, that would be so awesome. It's too much. Me and you talked about it briefly this week, and I was just like, God, that is so sharp. And the black ones they have on there, just, God, they just look so good. And then thinking about getting like a red and navy and a baby, God, that's a great idea. The baby blue charging case. Man, that would be awesome. But since Ole Miss is probably not going to have much of a football season, I'll just keep my white ones and
wait until generation three when they're finally off of self-imposed whatever is happening there. But yeah,
once we go to a bowl game again, then I'll think about it.
once we win a bowl game, then we should do it. If they do the Sugar Bowl again, that's when you should treat yourself. No, the AirPods are $159. If you get the AirPods painted, they're an additional $130. But if you get the case done too, you're looking at a total out of pocket of about $320. So it's insane, but those jet black AirPods and the jet black case looked, oh, my hand was hovering over the buy button like, oh, I want this so bad. Oh, that would look so nice.
But wife, I really need these really badly.
As much grief as I've been catching over the Ring Pro that I'm trying to get installed right now, I can't even fight that fight right now. So
Brian, if you had bought three pair that day you ordered your first ones on the first day they come out, you could have resold a pair and easily paid for the Colorware ones now.
This is the problem. This is the problem. I should do... I'm not normally as opportunistic as you are, where when something comes out, your first thought is, how many can I buy and resell? I guess I should, but my first thought is, what can I get into my grubby little hands for me to use? And then I don't really think about the... And I guess I should have. I had mine 4 days before Christmas, and if you go to the Apple Store app right now and try to buy these, it's showing mid-April. Like, we're still talking, you know, 5 months later, you still can't walk into a store and just get some. I agree with you. I should have done that for no other reason, just to get the Colorware stuff to paint. But I still will say, the day that they were announced back in December, I think I pinged both of you, go now, hit order, I'm doing it, I'm on it. I did that with lots of people, like, go and get it, and I was the only one that pulled the trigger.
It's like the Christmas season of 1996, where you see people buying dozens of Tickle Me Elmos so that they can resell them for marked up prices.
When you said Christmas 1996, I thought you were going to invoke the Arnold Schwarzenegger Sinbad classic Jingle All the Way. I thought that's what you were going for there. With young Anakin Skywalker, Jake Lloyd. You were going to say something, Jim?
I didn't get that reference at all. I was just like, what the heck is he talking about?
So a few episodes back, we talked about podcast clients and how you consume podcasts. And this seems about as good a time as any to point out that we've had two major podcast clients get released this week with major modifications. We've had Overcast 3 that came out and Castro 2.3. So did you guys read about these and the new changes that are in them?
I read about the changes to Castro. I've never actually used Castro. It looks fine. I read about the changes to Overcast 3, and I'm also an Overcast 3 user. I've been using Overcast again probably most of this year. I think I switched back after Christmas. I was trying to make a go of using the Apple Podcast app. Finally just was like, no, I can't do it. Back to Overcast 3. I've enjoyed it. I haven't used any of the 3D touch controls or any of the lock screen additions, but the new player is nice as far as how you can how you play episodes and what you can see. For me, a podcast app, you know, it needs to sync well. I like the feature where you can remove dead space in podcast to kind of speed them up a little bit, because I don't really like playing at like 1.5 or 2x like some people do. I just don't like that sound. So sometimes I'll speed it up slightly, like 1.1, 1.2, just depends. But yeah, I mean, it works. I've actually, for a while there, I was running it on my iPad and phone, and I realized I've never really using it on my iPad, and it was downloading all the time there. And so I just took it off my iPad, and I only have it on my iPhone now. I know that's one of your big things, Brian, is you kind of like to have your client everywhere instead of just one device. So for me, I haven't tried out the iPad version of Overcast 3, but on iPhone, works great.
What about you, Brad? What are you using to consume? And we'll come back to the features in just a minute, because I do want to talk about both of these a little bit.
I'm still using Pocket Cast, mainly because I think when I started using it, there was some features in it that did not exist in Castro or Overcast, or if they did, I didn't like the way they were implemented. Like, I couldn't get to it from within the play screen or something. You actually had to drill down into the setting screen or the settings somewhere and toggle it on or off. I do like on Castro the new, if it has like a turn-by-turn interruption or something where your GPS may talk over it, it'll automatically reverse for 1.5 seconds, which is kind of neat.
Castro does that, you say?
Castro. I may wind up re-downloading these again just to see what they're like, because I'll download a handful of apps that do all the same thing and see which one I like better, and then delete the ones I don't really care about. So I guess I'll do that this week with my podcast apps.
Overcast will actually pause when nav apps are talking and then start back up, and the podcast app for Apple is supposed to do that, and that's one of the reasons I switched back, is because it just stopped working with Waze for some reason after working great for, you know, a while. It's almost like it didn't know Waze was a navigation app and it just kept going, or it would pause and not restart at all. So that's one of the reasons I actually switched back to Overcast when I did.
Pocket Cast has been doing that since the fall too as well. So it's been in there a while where it will pause when a navigation app kicks in and does something.
There was a release at some point where they added it in where it would pause and actually resume correctly, because there was an older point release earlier in 2016 that if the phone rang, I think if a call came in, it would pause and resume correctly. But if your nav interrupted it, it wouldn't resume correctly or something. And they've since fixed that.
So starting with the features that are in Castro 2.3, I guess rich notifications triage. So when a new episode comes in, so Castro treats your podcast kind of like an inbox, kind of like an email client. And you get enough information when a new episode hits as to see whether or not you want to listen to it, or just sort of, you know, archive it, which I think is kind of nice, because if you're like me, I don't listen to every episode of a podcast that comes out. I do skip around a lot, and I can't stand to listen to more than one episode in a row, and I'll bounce around. I really seem to have like ADD when it comes to my podcast. So I would appreciate that, I think. I do like the, if you pause an episode with less than 3 minutes to go, it'll send you a notification that's, you know, not obtrusive really. It just says, do you want to archive the show and play the next episode in your playlist, or let it finish, which I think is kind of a nice feature. I think I bought this back in the fall when version 2 came out, and I tried it briefly and was like, it was okay. You know, I don't hate it, but I think I think I'm trying to remember, Brad, there was some feature that was missing in it that I wasn't really that happy about. I don't think at the time, the last time I looked at it, that it had a trim silence feature. Was that the thing that it was missing that we were both?
That may have been it. And it was one of those things that was kind of the deal breaker for me. Like I couldn't live without it.
Yeah, that I have to have that. And not to get too inside baseball, or too meta as it were, but when we edit this podcast, I remove a lot of the silence and the pregnant pauses and the ums and the uhs and the other vocal tics that we have. So it's a really smooth sound, but obviously that's overkill. It takes a lot of time. You can actually listen to our podcast without the trim silence, and it's perfectly fine, right? It's a way it flows along. For most podcasts, though, to not have it is just strange. And to Jim's point about not listening with at one and a half or two speed, once you get used to that, listening to things at normal speed sounds like you're talking to someone with a speech impediment from the deep south. It's like, just spit it out already. Let's get on with it. So when trim silence and one and a half is really what I like to do.
Wow. Yeah, one and a half is very noticeable on just about any podcast.
Yeah, I usually go your route, Jim. I'll go 1.1 or 1.2.
Yeah, one and a half is what I'll do. And I'll even do that on YouTube now. I've started speeding up the videos that I watch there to one and a half. So I keep things. My mind is constantly clicking, baby. I got to get things processed. I got things to watch, things to consume.
He's got to get it in there and move on to the next thing.
I have medicine for that. I don't need to do that I don't have to do that with my podcast app.
I have a massive podcast to edit. I can keep it at 45. I don't have to bump it down to 33 and a third. No, that's a really old reference. I don't know. I have a lot of stuff that I like to listen to, and just being able to compress it and get it done. I'll watch videos of things that I kind of only want to see. I'll watch things in VLC at 1.5 speed all the time. Years ago when I was binging Star Trek, The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or something, when it was back when you had to do it on DVDs, my DVD player did that. And for some of those episodes, I'd turn on closed captioning or whatever and bump it up to 1.5, and you get through that series so much quicker when you can move it along a little bit better. But
yeah, I think the PlayStation lets you have a play rate at like 32x or something. It's kind of crazy.
Once you get used to it, there's a friend of mine has a blind brother who had sight all of his life. He got hit in the face with a discus and went blind, and he listens to audiobooks, and he will listen to them at like 5x, so he can consume those things ridiculously fast. He got used to it, and anything else is weird. A couple of years ago when I was getting my Amazon certification, I was studying for several courses off of one of these online training sites, and the ability to speed up those training videos made life so much better. I just watched I went through a course recently on Ansible, and I played that thing at 1.5 speed just to, it's like, all right, let's get this thing done. It's saying 2.5 hours. I think I can do this in an hour. Let's go. I don't know. You just get used to it, and you can consume it quicker. But without, you know, we've gone way off the rails there. Without the trim silence, as nice as Castro is, that would be the thing that would probably keep me from using it. Though I will go back periodically and, you know, review these things just to see if those types of features have changed. So with Overcast 3, Jim, big Overcast user. So it's got the, let's see what the list of changes here. We got the tweaked iOS icon. So it's a little more iOS 10-ish because, you know, that really matters. The card view, like Apple Music, what do you think about that? Because in Apple Music, I am not a big fan of that card interface. I do not like it one bit. I think it could be better, but I can never seem to hit the tap target to move it around the way that I want it to on the first try. And I have issues with Spotify's interface too, but the Apple Music one really frustrates me. So what are you thinking of the implementation of that feature in Overcast?
I hated it at first as well on Apple Music because I couldn't find anything, or it wasn't an intuitive interface for me. I use it enough now to where I'm fine with it. I know, you know, if I want to switch my shuffle or switch my, you know, repeat or, you know, slide up, you know, do the look at lyrics, all that kind of stuff. The one thing that bugs me, there was something the other day, it was like something with the playlist, and you can't really go back to like your playlist view that you started on and then change something and then go back to what was playing. It's like they're really two distinct things. There's like, there is a, this is what's playing going on, and then there's, this is the playlist that you started from. And those are two distinct things. Like if you make a change and start playing again, it'll reshuffle, you know, the whole lot again instead of what you've already heard. As far as for Overcast 3, it's not not like music where it's like something switching every 3 or 4 minutes or anything. I mean, I have two ways that I listen to podcasts. I'll go in and listen to individual episodes of sports podcasts like Bill Simmons or Outkick the Coverage and just play an episode. Or I listen to the news and I have 4 or 5 podcasts that I have in a news playlist. I have them prioritized using the playlist prioritization features of Overcast. And I just start from the top and I just hit play and it just plays these news podcasts one after another from the newest backwards because I want to listen to the newest news. And then, you know, if I look in there and I realize I've got a couple that are a couple days old, I'll just go ahead and delete them out because I have them set to only keep like 5 episodes each of those news, like daily or multiple times daily type podcasts. And that's how I use Overcast, and it seems to work well for me that way. So, and the new interface hadn't changed that.
Interesting. So let's see, what else have you used? The lock screen widget that gives you the basic controls, like the what's up next? Or actually, you know, side note, before we talk about that, do you guys use lock screen widgets at all, or am I the only one on that?
I really don't use them that much.
I don't either. I've just now started using notifications a little more, like adding things to the notifications page so I can scroll through there and kind of see what's been going on. But as far as the lock screen, I think I added like the Verizon data counter to it, but now I don't even need that because I'm on unlimited. I have the battery meter on there so I can see the battery on the phone and then the AirPods. And I maybe Fantastical, but I don't ever use it. I think I added it on there because it was something to do. But
you lamos. I am really disappointed. I'm particularly disappointed in you, Brad. This seems like it's right in your wheelhouse and you're not doing it. All right, so let's go off on a side note and we'll get back to Overcast in a moment. Are you guys familiar with Launcher Pro, that app?
I tried to do some stuff with Launcher Pro and I just put it away. I'm like, there's just so much here. I think I would infinitely try to configure it.
All right, so I'll give you a hint what's on mine. So if I slide on over to the lock screen or the left, as far left as you can go, I have Launcher at the top and I have the Uber widget, which tells me how close the nearest UberX is. I have 2 custom Waze widgets, one that tells me how long it would take me right now to go to my job and how long it would take me to drive to my wife's office. I have Find Friends, I have the HomeKit, and Uber Eats. So not all of those are exactly healthy, but most of them are travel related, but still things that you would need in a pinch. Things that if I want to fire up Waze and know how long it's going to take me to get to work or just slide the widget over, that alone is worth the $5 or whatever the app costs, the custom little launchers they make with Waze, where you can put in destinations. So what I'll do there, historically, before I had the Waze tablet we talked about, was if I'm going on a trip, I'll add one in for the destination that I'm going to and a couple of other destinations that I may make while I'm at that trip. So, you know, if I was going to a new client site in another state for the first time, right, I'd put, you know, client A, client B, airport, whatever, to know exactly how I'm going to get around. Being able to summon an Uber that way is pretty good as well, even though you can use Siri for that now. And the other thing that I use is the Up Next, which is, I guess it's part of the calendar widget, but it's the launcher, it's batteries, and Up Next. So I can, at a glance, I know exactly what my next meeting is and what the status of all my batteries are and how quickly I can get the hell out of wherever I am. So all the most important things that you would need at your fingertips.
So you have all of those in the launcher app. So it's not the native lock screen app like that you're putting on there. You're doing that with launcher.
No. So batteries and the Up Next, those are the native widgets that come with it, only in Launcher. And I know this is a audio-based medium, but I can show you guys over our Skype camera thing. You can see my Uber, my Waze widgets, my garage door, my Uber Eats, and my Find Friends in Launcher. So I mean, you can go as granular as you want to go with it. You can do some really crazy stuff. But my rule of thumb is, what do I need on a regular basis that is really useful? Those Waze widgets are superb. Love them. So configurable. But anyway, back to Overcast. We're just all over the place. Let's see. So what do they got? They have the episode info that pops up in rich notifications. And one of the things that I haven't used, or
I wouldn't use that because I don't really have notifications for new episodes. I know like Bill Simmons comes out on like Mondays and usually like Fridays. Maybe there's a midweek one. Outkick the Coverage is every day. All the news ones are, you know, every day. Some of them, I guess it would, you know, it'd be nice to get notified, but I'm in the app enough that I can just see, hey, there's a new episode of Death, Sex, and Money, and I know I'm going to want to listen to it once I see it. So
I have it open enough that it's going to get downloaded and I'm going to listen to it at some point. So it's not really, there doesn't really have to be a priority for me to have to listen to one specific one over another one. They're all going to get listened to.
I don't like banners, period. The only reason I have banners enabled on anything is so it'll show up on my Apple Watch if the phone is locked. It annoys me on the phone, but I want the notifications on my watch. And you have to have banners turned on to get them on your watch. So that's only, really the only reason that I use banners on my phone for notifications. I wish I could just say only on the watch and don't show me banners on the phone.
So is it safe to say that you guys don't use the 3D touch actions inside of Overcast that are there as well?
No, I think the only thing I've really used 3D touch on is Tweetbot, you know, just for like a quick send a tweet or send the latest picture tweet and a couple of the other built-in Apple apps. But I don't use a whole lot of 3D touch either.
All this innovation is just wasted on you guys.
I've had the phone for so long and I get used to how I use it that I don't pick up some of the new stuff, kind of like Siri. Like I've seen my mom.
Old dog, new tricks.
Yeah, totally. It's an old dog, new tricks thing. It's like I watch my mom and she does all this stuff with Siri because she doesn't know how to do it otherwise. Whereas I just pick it up and click and don't even think to try to do it with Siri.
I was born a snake handler. I'm going to die a snake handler.
You take the boy out of Water Valley, but is that what you're saying?
No, I was actually the Water Valley boy is the one that actually plays with all the new stuff. So what about the new episode action tray? Overcast has the tap to reveal action drawer similar to Tweetbot. Are you guys using that at all?
I haven't played with that at all yet. I need to look and see what that's about. Oh, no, I know what. Okay. That's just the little, when you click a podcast, the new way to play things or delete. That was the biggest upgrade of the whole app. That's kind of what you see the most. Is before you would just click on an episode and it would play, but now you click an episode and you get that little reveal drawer, like just like Tweetbot, like you said, and you can play or delete it or add it to the up next or whatever. And so, yeah, I think it's really well done. You have to hit the screen twice to play something, but once you get used to that, it's fine.
So did you ever try Pocket Cast, Jim, or have you just been Overcast in the Apple Podcast Player the whole time?
No, I did try Pocket Cast for a while, and I think the reason, the one reason I didn't like Pocket Cast is because it didn't filter. Like when you looked at the screen, it always showed every podcast you were subscribed to, not just the ones that had like new episodes that you could listen to. And so like in Overcast, one of the things it does is if there's no new episodes, it kind of moves those items to the bottom of the list. Kind of like if you were...
Yeah, it does that in Pocket Cast. It'll put stuff that has new episodes at the top.
I thought there was a filter situation that existed on maybe the iPad or something, but not the iPhone. Now that I'm remembering this, I do remember now when you looked at this, there was something where it did it on one device, but it didn't do it on the other, I think. Wasn't that right, Jim? Where like I tried it on the iPad and it worked?
That might have been it or something. Yeah, but it wouldn't filter them off to the bottom. And I like it kind of like you would look at an instant messenger app where you've got your people who are online at the top and then all your people who are offline or busy like grouped into the bottom. That kind of thing with the podcast where anything that's got new episodes is listed up at the top and then all the other stuff is sorted down at the bottom. What is Brad showing me here? Is that the sort?
It just lets you choose the sort order, so you can choose like sort by recent episode. And what that's going to do is put the ones with the newest episodes at the top.
Yeah, but that still just puts then you got to go figure out like look through the list and find the one you want to listen to. I want them alphabetical, grouped at the top with the ones that have new episodes, and the other ones just not there at all, like just kind of at the bottom that I never see. Whereas if you sort by release date, then you know, whichever one, I ended up with a bunch of news podcasts always right at the top because those have several episodes a day, at least, you know, like the Wall Street Journal ones or some of those that I listen to. I kind of rely on that for a lot of my news. I actually get news from podcasts instead of just podcasts like this one that people do on their own. Wall Street Journal, NPR, some other news outlets. It's kind of how I get my news during the day. If I, you know, want to take a break from work and walk to the bathroom or walk to the cafeteria, I just start playing that news feed just to kind of find out what's going on in the world, you know, for that 5-10 minutes that I'm not sitting at my desk.
Your use case is radically different than mine. That is completely not the use case that I use for podcasts at all. It is along the lines of the Death, Sex, and Money, or you know, Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew's podcast, or something like that, where I know there's going to be a daily episode. They're going to talk about what's happened, but it's not going to be like up to the minute type of AP Newswire type of functionality. That would drive me nuts if I was getting if it was was clogging my system, was clogging my podcast client with stuff like that, I would go crazy. I don't even know how you do that. I don't see how you even stand it.
See, at the top of every hour, NPR, you know, does a news summary for like four or five minutes. And then, so every show that's on NPR, or whether it's your local public radio affiliate, they know that they can't really start until 5 after the hour for whatever show they're doing that hour. So if you subscribe to that podcast, yes, your podcast client would be getting very clogged, because you'd get 24 of those every day. And I tried that for a little while, and I was like, man, this is way too much. Especially since they're going to go over the same stuff a couple of times. You know, they may say something about Syria or something about Trump, you know, one or two times. That's some sort of headline type deal.
So I do the NPR. I do the morning report, the midday report, the marketplace podcast, which is usually at about 6 o'clock at night. The summer sums up the business marketplace. Some of the Wall Street Journal ones, they've got a couple of news ones that have a couple episodes a day. And so, I mean, and I still do the other stuff. You know, I love my Bill Simmons, Outkick the Coverage, Death, Sex, and Money. I have a couple of the crime ones, the true crime ones that have gotten really popular. I listen to those in the car, like the longer form stuff like you're talking about. Those, you know, if I'm getting on the plane, I listen to those on the plane.
Sort of like audiobooks.
Just like audiobooks, yeah. Or if I'm in the car, I'm going to pick up the dogs, whatever I'm doing, I'm walking around doing groceries. Sometimes I'll listen to one of those. It's kind of like, if I know I'm going to have a block of about 30 minutes or ever how long a podcast is going to last, then I'll start one. Otherwise, I'm just listening to my news podcast. And while we're talking about this, I want to give a shout out to an episode I listened to this weekend that was just really good. So Bill Simmons interviewed, what's his name? Thompson from Stratechery.
Ben Thompson, yes.
Ben Thompson. So Bill Simmons had Ben Thompson on his podcast, you know, on like the sports, normally a sports podcast, but it was really good. If you're into Stratechery at all, listen to that episode of Bill Simmons, because I really enjoyed that episode where they talk a lot about, you know, business stuff and Netflix and Apple and Google and Amazon. It was really good. Bill Simmons does a great interview. I think his HBO show kind of got a bad rap because it was just on a bad time slot. He ran into a bunch of conflicts with NBA finals and then politics stuff when all that was happening. But I really think Bill Simmons does a great interview with somebody. He asks questions that I don't think a normal interviewer would ask. It seems like more stuff that I would want to talk to these people about.
Well, while we're recommending podcasts, I want to throw I added a few this past week. So the My Brother, My Brother and Me podcast, which now has a show on CISO, I'm checking out for the first time. It's pretty good. There was one that I heard about that seemed really weird that I figured I had to try. It's called Missing Richard Simmons. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but you notice...
Yeah, I've been meaning to subscribe to that one.
In the last few years, you haven't seen Richard Simmons. He's like disappeared from public life. And there's this guy who's out trying to find what happened to him, who was a friend of his. And I heard it advertised on Mark Maron's podcast. And I just subscribed. There's two episodes. I haven't listened to them yet. But I'm fascinated, because it just seems like, what a random thing for someone to make a podcast about. The other would be the Unmasked, the Ron Bennington Unmasked comedy interview podcast. I think you and I talked about this offline, Brad, about a week or so ago. Those are very good, and he interviews comedians. This is what's been running on SiriusXM for years, but they'll release sort of best of episodes and drop them for free. I highly recommend them. They're 40-45 minutes a pop, and highly entertaining. So just throwing it out there. But about the new stuff, now that you have a developer who wrote a virtual Amazon Echo that runs either on your Mac, your iPhone, or anywhere else that you have, iOS or Mac OS, you don't need this podcast, Jim, anymore. Just hit your virtual Echo button and say, give me my news brief, and it'll just read off whatever's going on that you have configured. It'll be great.
I should do that. I did get that app, the Reverb app, that you could do the Echo. So that's all I have to do with that, is just say, hey, tell me the sports news, or tell me the politics, or what are the keywords?
You configure your sources and say, tell me what's going on in the world, or give me my news flash briefing, and it'll read you off headlines.
I will take that for homework and try it out this week.
I've actually been using that on the Mac a little bit when I've been working from home. Every once in a while, I'll try it. And some of the stuff works on it, some of it doesn't. Trying to play podcasts via TuneIn via that thing does not work. It's not supported. But it looks like the being able to turn stuff on and off does actually work with it, which is kind of nice, considering my Echo is on the main floor and I hang out in the basement most of the time. So that's sort of cool.
And my Echo should arrive by the end of this week. The one I ordered earlier this month are still back ordered, or the Dot. I ordered the Echo Dot. So I'll finally have one of those actually here in the house that I can entertain myself with.
Novelty will wear off pretty quick. At least it did for me. But I mean, I still like it. I still use it, but it's, I don't know. I still don't see what all the fuss is about. I have a virtual assistant to me is one that's with you all the time. So as bad as Siri can be, I get more usage out of Siri because I constantly have something to which I can interface with Siri. Whereas with the Dot, but you know, before these little unofficial apps, there is no way to interface with it when you're not next to it, which is in your home. So your mileage may vary.
I don't spend any time in my bedroom unless I'm going back there to go to sleep. Like, we don't have a TV in the bedroom or whatever, so we don't just hang out in there. And my Echo is centrally located in the front of the house where we spend a lot of our waking hours. So, yes, the novelty of it has worn off, but the utility only goes up every week because there's all the time I get an email every week from Amazon saying, what is Alexa doing this week? Or what's new with Alexa or something like that. So there's always something new that I'm learning that I can do with it. And it's not always just, well, what's the weather? What time is it? Set a timer. It's always something new that I can do with it that's really handy with my day-to-day in and out of the kitchen or in and out of the house.
Yeah, I don't mean to say that it doesn't have utility or it's not useful. That's not what I mean at all. What I mean to say is the difference there is with Siri, I'm interfacing either through CarPlay, through my watch, through my AirPods, through my phone, through my iPad, through my Mac, right? I have all of these ways to interact with it. One of those devices is always within earshot of where I am. So, you know, my biggest problem now is when I invoke Siri that I'll have, which device did it answer? Like sometimes I'm in the car and I expect the car to answer and I look down and it actually answered on my watch or something like that. You know, I've had weird situations like that. To me, if it were available more places, then I would tend to use it. And I know that from CES, it's going to start being in more things and that'll be, you know, it'll be more ubiquitous. I heard today that Motorola is going to start using Alexa as its default assistant in some of its things. So it's going to get used more, right? I'm not trying to say it sucks at all. Just even as bad as Siri is, though, it's always there for me to talk to and ask and remind and control things. And I don't know. That's why I seem to get more utility out of it.
Right. I get where you're going with that. Just the fact that it's more saturated in your life. It's on more devices and it's more readily available. And that's one reason why I put my Echo where it is in the house, just based on the amount of usage that it would receive just being where it is. If it were in the back of the house, it would never get used. Same kind of concept. You know, you're in the basement and your Echo's on the second floor. So yeah, I mean, it's a similar situation in that regard.
So we have other things to cover, but none of them are really timely, so they can kind of wait, with the exception of the Cloudflare data leakage. But really, that's sort of outside the purview of what we would normally talk about anyway. Jim, you had some stuff you wanted to talk about along the lines of automation, did you?
So yes, my girlfriend today, after now spending a weekend or two at my apartment and seeing me flash things up on the TV using AirPlay or talk to Siri and turn this off and do all these different things, has said, so next weekend, we're going to the Apple store and you're going to load me up on all the stuff I need to do this stuff to my house. And we're going to, you know, we're going to get an Apple TV and get that all set up so she can AirPlay from, you know, her iPad or her daughter's iPad or iPhones. She wants, you know, we might look at the doorbells and the thermostats to see, you know, what we can do with those, and anything else that, you know, that kind of looks neat. You know, she's ready to step into that. She thinks it's very neat, but she doesn't know a lot about it at all. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to kind of going and, you know, with somebody else's checkbook, walk into the Apple store and have a little fun. I mean, you know, within reason.
Danger.
It's always fun to spend someone else's money. So from an automation perspective, is she looking to integrate more with Siri or looking to integrate more with Amazon?
Well, she actually already has, an Echo and an Echo Dot that she got for Christmas. Like they got one of each of one and she's done some stuff with those. So myself not having any experience with those, that's one of the reasons I mentioned it to you guys is, you know, what kind of things should we look to try to do with Amazon versus Siri, or should we try to do it all with Siri? Since I know she already has those devices in her house. I mean, and I know she wants an Apple TV as well, because we're going to, the other thing we're going to do is try to get her off of her cable and do some streaming services instead of paying the huge cable bill. So,
well, there's always the possibility of having an overlap as far as home automation stuff. And it wouldn't hurt to go ahead and make sure that you either go one route or the other, like you're only going to go the Apple route or you're only going to go the Amazon route, or make sure that you get devices that are going to support both of those technologies.
Let me add my two cents to that. So while I can say definitively that it's nice to have both and you'd want to do both, a lot of times it's not practical. So it depends really on what she wants to automate as to how this is actually going to go down. What is it she's exactly wanting to automate? Do you have anything in mind specifically that you want to do?
I think some lights at a minimum, and maybe the thermostat, depended on how much, you know, she would have to get into to do some of that. So definitely, you know, one or two lights. I'm not sure if we're going to do switches or if we're going to buy the individual lights that have it built in. And then just from a Apple TV perspective, just to do some of the online streaming for her cable. I mean, that's not really home automation, but that's one of the things she's definitely interested in, is, you know, trying to go that route and have everything pushing through there. But again, she already has an Echo and an Echo Dot.
And she also has an iPhone, so she also has Siri.
Correct, an iPhone and an iPad.
So see?
But not a Mac.
It doesn't matter. HomeKit doesn't work on a Mac anyway, so it doesn't matter. My suggestion would be to focus more on the Siri side than the Amazon side. But that's just been my own experience. Brad, I'm sure you probably have a different experience on that. I'm a big fan of the Ecobee 3 Lite thermostats. At first, I wasn't sure if I liked them. If you want to make, you know, Alexa deal with those, all you have to do is use IFTTT, and you can make the integrations to tie into them to control them. So keep that in mind too, is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a one or the other type of proposition. If you get something that's more Siri based, like the Ecobee thermostats are definitely Siri based, you can still integrate IFTTT and then tell it. Now you have to jump through a couple more hoops. It's not as natural sounding, some of the commands you end up having to pass to get that intercepted, but you can still control it using both in that fashion. You know, I started out trying to buy things that worked with both, and I have several things that work with both, but some of them are just kind of HomeKit only, and some of the ones that look nicer are HomeKit only, at least in my opinion. Though I will say, I think my office lights actually work with both. I think I can, I'll definitely send you some of my recommendations. I think Brad should probably do the same, and then you can pick between them.
Tell me about this doorbell that you said you've been lobbying for. Tell me what's involved with that. Is it the kind that has the camera built in or anything like that? Or is it straight up, you know, what's involved with that? Because she definitely has that issue where recently she switched from copper to fiber for her internet. Like, she got the fiber internet and her doorbell stopped working. And it looks like one pair of an Ethernet cable is what was going into her doorbell in the front of the house. And I just thought that was really odd.
So normally you have the transformer and you have the 12 volt that go into your doorbell. So that's really weird that would have happened. I can tell you about my weird situation. My weird situation is that the previous owners of my house did not have a doorbell. They had this weird old timey crank in the middle of the door that you twist. And if you come out here in June, Jim, you'll see it. And
it goes, "Auga."
It might as well go Auga, because I don't think anybody in 100 years have used this thing. They were nice people. I like their design choices they made for a lot of the things. This is one where it was nonsensical to me of like, why don't you just have a stupid doorbell? Because what they've done is they've made sort of a problem for me. The way that my front door is set up, I have these a window that goes all the way around the door, one of those things. And I had my electrician out here last week, and he wanted to put the transformer on the inside of the wall and according... But it's going to be tacky, right? He's like, "Well, do you want a faceplate on your wall to cover it?" I'm like, "I want to patch over it and paint over it." He's like, "Well, code says you can't do that." So I was going to have to, I have this four light, this four, what do you call it? Gang switch plate. That's sort of ornate. Wife doesn't want to get rid of it. So I was going to put a fifth one in there, five in there, and put the transformer behind the fifth one. And it was just going to be a dummy switch. Well, she didn't like that. So I'm going through all of these hoops to figure out how to get this doorbell. And once I get it out there, you know, it's still going to be kind of off to the side. All this to say that these are the Ring doorbells. So you may remember, I know back in November, we were talking on Black Friday, I bought a Ring doorbell. And there's two that you can get. There's the Ring, which is the normal one, and the Ring Pro. The Ring can accommodate no doorbell. That would seem like the better one for me to get, but you have to change batteries in it and you keep batteries in it. And it just seemed like it was troublesome. So I thought, you know what? I didn't realize what an ordeal this was going to be in my particular case. In your case, since she already has an existing wire, you get yourself, you know, you could probably figure it out or get an electrician out there and pay $100 or whatever and just get them to knock it out and it would be fine, right? It's probably 10 minutes worth of work for an electrician. In my particular case, though, I wanted the Ring.
You could really figure it out on your own with even if you don't know anything about electricity, you could figure it out on your own with a short 3-minute YouTube video. I mean, basic electricity is easy stuff, especially with something as low voltage as a doorbell. It won't be the same as getting into pulling a receptacle out of the wall or something if you're not comfortable.
While that's true, tracing it out and finding where the transformer actually is located.
That's a good point.
That's the problem. Like if you have a normal house, it's probably not a big deal. Like everybody else that has them, sometimes they'll stick them on the wall. In my particular case, it's going to have to go in the wall. And in my particular case, I'm having to figure out the least obtrusive way and how I'm going to hide it. You're not going to have to jump through the crazy hoops that I'm doing, but at least go over to her house and see if you see the transformer and see where it is and where it's feeding off of. The fact that it stopped working when she got, when her internet changed, that would give me pause. Like something is going on here.
Did she have an alarm system or some sort of smart home connect? Because that seems like if you would change from copper to fiber, that would have an effect on the doorbell, I mean.
That I'm not sure of. I just know she said that it seems like that's when it stopped working. She said the guy spent like 3 hours at her house doing all sorts of stuff when that switchover happened.
Or he just jerked some wires loose and one of them happened to be her doorbell.
Yeah, call an electrician. Just write the check, get it done, and then not...
Yeah, that could definitely be it. So, and we all know better than to have me try to fix anything that you can't charge via USB. Just don't do it.
Now the differences between these cameras is I think the Ring Pro does the 1080p, whereas the regular Ring just does 720, if that matters. But the nice thing about it, so a friend of mine, the same friend who gave me the Android phone to use, she had one installed right at the same time that I bought mine on Black Friday. We both bought the Ring. We both realized it wasn't what we wanted. She returned hers and got a Ring Pro first, and I just got mine like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. So she gave me access to her camera. Oh my goodness. Yes, this is a nice thing. So there's a field of vision in front of this thing. Anytime someone approaches, it goes ahead and starts recording. So on my iPad, I left notifications turned on, right? So it will record every time somebody comes up to your door, it captures that. So just on a lark, I'm sitting there and I go through the app and I see the UPS man bringing her Zappos and leaving it on her doorstep. I see the neighbor kid come by and like try to like sell her Girl Scout cookies or whatever. I'm sitting there reading at midnight one night, Marvel Unlimited, and I see there's movement at your front door. So I touch it and I see her take, and it does night vision, by the way. I see her taking her dog outside to let it go use the bathroom and then bring it back in.
That's kind of creepy, Brian.
It's not creepy when someone voluntarily gives it to you without you asking for it so that you can see how that it works.
Yeah, how it works. It's just proof of concept.
I'm not. All right. I knew you were going to say that, but no, this was.
You hacked my doorbell camera.
No, not at all. Not at all. This was, do I want this or am I going to return this? And she was like, check out how cool this thing is. There was a thing on Twitter the other day where there was a house here in Atlanta that kept getting broken into like 3 times over 6 months by the same people. And I'm going through my Twitter feed. I see they finally caught the people. The 4 pictures that showed up in the preview in Tweetbot were from the Ring Pro camera. The woman installed a Ring and several interior cameras too, but all the ones they posted were them walking up and ringing the doorbell to see if anyone was home. So having that as a feature is a real, real handy thing. Just being able to see. And if you're not there, that's the other thing too. When she gave me access to this and I was playing with it, I noticed that it had a talk and end button. I'm like, go out in your front yard right now. So she goes out to her doorbell, goes outside, and I'm talking to her through the thing. Like I hit the talk button and we're having a conversation. I can see her on the app standing at the door.
Because you are virtually home.
So let's say you're not home. Some creep comes up. You can press the button, tell them we don't want any. We're all good here and send them on their way. And you're always virtually home. And if you have the push notifications turned on, you know when somebody's at your door. It's not so sensitive that, you know, it's going to catch everything. Not a car going down the street's going to set it off. I did notice that my friend has no front porch, really, not to speak of, and she lives up north, so it started snowing, and snow set off the movement. So your mileage may vary. My front door's kind of nestled back a little bit, so I don't think that would happen. But it's definitely made me want one of these things. And they go for about $250 on Amazon, but you can get them. I got mine for $175 on eBay. So, and if I can't get buy off to use mine, I'll gladly sell you mine at cost, Jim. So
that was the other question that I wanted to ask is what kind of stuff can we get off Amazon cheaper than walking in and buying it at the Apple store? I mean, what kind of, like, I know like the plugs and some of the lights, I can look on like Wirecutter and see what they recommend and probably get those off of Amazon for cheaper than the Apple store is going to sell them. I know with the Apple TV, it's kind of just what it is.
I was going to say, don't commit to buying anything when you walk into the store. Go in, open your Amazon app and start scanning barcodes, because that at least to show you, you know, because there will be some stuff in the Apple store that's going to be exclusive to the Apple store that you won't be able to buy on Amazon.com. But at the same time, there might be some stuff in there that you could get on Amazon, and you could sort of do a price check to just see if it would save you, you know, $10 on one switch or something. Plus, you wouldn't have to pay any tax or shipping on it if you got it from Amazon.
Depending whether or not Texas has that. I know Texas doesn't have the sales tax, but I don't know if they...
Yeah, we pay sales tax in Texas for Amazon, so...
Right, depending. We don't in Mississippi.
Are you sure about that? It's about to happen. I have friends on Facebook who are complaining about it.
Then it's going to be a new thing, because it hadn't happened to me yet. So if it may be coming down the pike, but it hadn't hit yet.
I saw some of my wife's relatives complaining about it, so it's under review right now in Mississippi. It got us in Georgia like starting in like 2014 or something, so I'm used to it.
It's coming then, I'm sure.
When they start paying sales tax, they can start putting distribution centers in your state, and then all the retailers that are happy, oh, now it's a level playing field. No, it's about to be. You're going to look back on that and wish that they had never come to your state if you're a local retailer. But anyway, that's a digression.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can get instant delivery, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you're right. That's a whole nother episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, I will gladly pay sales tax if I can get Amazon deliveries in 3 hours or something.
It will hasten the local retailer's demise, but I digress. The other thing to keep in mind here, Jim, and take it from someone who is obsessive about his research, find out specifically also what type of lights that you're going to be doing. So in my house, previous owners did the dual light switches where there's one that turns it off on one side of the room and one that turns it off on the other. That impacts which ones you can buy. Also, if you have light switches that are double,
because of the poles in the switch, there's a dual pole switch and a single pole switch, and that's what allows you to have one on one side and one on the other.
No, what ends up happening, like in the case of you guys just saw me turn on my office light and off my office light. One switch is on one side that does it, and for some reason on the other side of the room, which is like 8 feet or 9 feet long, they did the same thing, which is ridiculous. But so what we ended up doing was making one switch a dummy switch. So we completely disabled it, and it's only on this one. However, I have a remote control, a Pico remote for this one that sits in the wall. It looks like a switch and functions like a switch, but it's battery powered. It's not powered off of the other pole. So again, identify specifically what you want. If you have those light switches where you have two lights or more on a single switch, that's also going to be something where you're going to be limited in your choices, what you're able to do. So I've been down this path. I'm actually about to get some in my garage automated as well, so I can turn those on and off as part of my schedule. Mine, I thought, is a weird use case. I've never been in a house that had so many dual light switches like that. Anyway, it's something. And that's caused me a little bit of consternation.
I had never heard of that issue, so that's a good one to remember to know about. So
yeah, be very sure which ones you're going to do before you do it. The plugs are a little...
Maybe try one room at a time before you try to buy enough for the whole house at once.
Yeah, I would say start small and just get used to it and make sure you like it. From a plug perspective, I have some of these big wall warts, as Brad calls them, that do both Amazon and Siri. They're okay, but they're so unsightly.
That's what I have now, is like the big Googie thing. But where I have it plugged in, you really can't see it. But yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, if you can put a piece of furniture or whatever in front of it, yeah, it's no big deal. But if you're gonna have one chest level on a chest level like receptacle, it's can be unsightly.
Now I do have one that is Siri only, that covers both outlets and is very low profile and slim, and I love that one. That one looks really, really nice, and it's not one that I'm embarrassed for people to see, but you can't use it via Alexa. It's HomeKit only. I know we're talking a lot of vague generalities to the folks listening. We'll put links in the show notes, and they'll be annotated so you'll know what we're talking about. But I'll send you too, Jim, before this this episode goes live, so you can see what we're talking about. Some of them work better than others. Some of them are a little hinky. I guess the Chamberlain broke my garage door integration because they had their own coming out, so they did something on the API. So I haven't been able to open my garage with Siri in about 2 or 3 weeks. And I was playing around with a node server and digging through some of the JSON and trying to make it work, and it was just more trouble than it's worth. In a month, I'll pay the $50 and have the official from Chamberlain solution for my garage door. You know, be thinking about those types of things, the lights. I don't know that I would do the Philips Hue. The Philips Hue are nice, but those bulbs are so expensive. And being able to just change the color of the light bulb, that's kind of cool. But do you really want to spend like $90 a light or something? Even that's crazy even for me.
Yeah, those seemed a little much. I did see that, and those seem a little much still. And I don't think she's crazy about trying to change light, you know, bulb colors.
There's a new automation light out now too called Twist. It has it's the bulb, obviously, with some smart features in the lighting, but it also has a speaker in it. So you could use it like multi-room speaker type setup. Granted, they're probably going to be expensive too. I actually haven't seen any pricing on them yet, but the whiz bang of the bells and the whistles of the device actually look pretty neat.
I was actually going to do a blog post for my site that I seldom update. I think I put the Waze tablet stuff on there, where I was going to talk about my decisions that I made and why I picked each piece of equipment that I did. Maybe I could step that up, or I could do the genesis of that into an email and send to you. And that would help a lot. The other thing I like, these are the Lutron Casetas that I use down here. I hate that they require their own bridge, but I do like saying, "Hey Siri, set my light to 10% in the office."
"Okay, Brian, I set the office light to 10.
"Set my office light to 35%. Now, most of the switches I have don't do that, because I actually didn't buy all of the same. I bought the Lutron Caseta down here. I bought the Elgato E for my single switch that I have coming in from the garage. Like, I wanted to experiment and say, do I like this? Do I like that? Though if I had to do it over, I would have probably picked the same Elgato that I'm using here for the one next to my garage. But these are actually pretty rock solid. They're just not pretty. If you have a wife who likes ornate light plates, they don't play well with it. So that's kind of a problem. That's what I'm running into with I was gonna automate all of my lights next to where the ring would go, and it was a no-go because she likes that ornate plate and I can't replace it.
Yeah, I mean, my houses are 40 years old, but still, you know, if I stick some clunky thing on the wall, Kim's not gonna have it. She's gonna say, nope, that can't go there.
So yeah, we can definitely let you know, at least from our perspective, some of the stuff that we pick. Maybe Brad will do the same. Maybe we'll start a thread and email back and forth on it, and just sort of share with you what we did. I would probably end up buying my stuff from Amazon or similar, just because you'll get better prices. And for God's sake, Jim, don't be afraid to use Fry's or Micro Center. Everything from Amazon with this guy. You live in a major city. Be able to take advantage of it. You can find some good deals, man.
Yeah, there's a Fry's pretty close to her house, or there's a couple of those around here. And there's a Micro Center. It's not close, but it's up there. They're both so junky here. It's hard to find what you're looking for. And it seems like the prices they have posted for them are always wrong. I'd almost rather go into Best Buy now. When I first moved to Dallas, I loved Fry's, but I don't know. It just seems like it's gotten junky.
The Fry's down here has gone kind of crappy. The Micro Center next to my house is still very, very good. But the fact that they both will price match Amazon is kind of a nice thing. So that's a, you know, something in your favor if you want it now, and it can help you. But anyway, we'll do that, and we'll put those in the show notes as well. I do have some videos on YouTube. You saw probably when I posted them originally, where I was talking to my lights and talking to my thermostat. And I am loving the Ecobees a lot more. I thought I was going to get rid of them at first, but it was just because I didn't understand how to use them. And I actually, when I got that differential down on the temperature to like 2 degrees from 5 degrees, oh my goodness, made a world of difference. Now my wife will ask me, "What do you have do you have the heat on?" It's like, no, I have the temperature set. Whatever it is within this range, it's going to just fluctuate and do whatever it has to do to maintain it. So no more manual tweaking.
Definitely good to know. And we can do some follow-up in a couple of weeks, depending on what we get and what I end up doing. You know, maybe we just go with the Apple TV and a couple simple items to start off with. So you know, we can do some follow-up on it in a couple weeks and kind of build up over time, see what we end up with.
Well, I think that's all I had for this week. What about you guys?
I believe that's it.
That's it for me. I thought that was a great discussion. I'm glad we were able to talk about it, and we've kind of got a test case now for me to go off and do some of this stuff that I didn't want to do to my apartment. So.
And through that, you'll learn something through the mistakes that you might make in your girlfriend's house that you know not to make in your house.
This is your beta test, your 1.0.
I'm not going to tell my girlfriend that she's my beta test. That's not exactly something that you want to advertise, right? But yeah, exactly, Brad. That's it for me.
All right. See you guys next week. And later, fellas.
Later, fellas. Later,
fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.